Love this podcast? Support this show through the supporter feature from Acast. It's up to you how much you give and there's no regular commitment. Just hit the link in the show description to support now.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need. Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/spoken. That's linkedin.com/spoken. Terms and conditions apply.
Hello again, you dirty bastards. Welcome to another episode of the Snugcast with your host Owen, that's me, and DJ, that's him.
How are you?
We have this podcast live every week, so we're in
pre-recorded live.
We're in Phil Grimes Pub in Waterford again this week, and as always, we'll start this podcast by saying what we're drinking. So, DJ, over to you. What are you drinking this week?
Thanks, Owen. I'm on a Metalman this week. Metalman Lager. Nice, crisp. Good, refreshing taste off it. One of those drinks where when you take the first sip of it, your whole palate is just cleansed and refreshed. And goes down really well. I find it's one of those that... I don't know, you know, sometimes you just take a sip of a drink and it's one of those drinks that I tend to drink in bigger gulps than I would normally another drink. I go through them quick enough. Don't know if that's a good or a bad thing, but it's definitely interesting. It just has that effect on me. I guzzle the stuff when I drink it. And going down well tonight, thanks.
Yeah, I've had it now a few times. And I've always said it blows the fucking head off me. Like, literally blows the head off me. But, like, that's a good thing as well, do you know?
It gets you where you want to go. And it gets you there quick enough. The first night we ever went out together in Waterford, when I moved here 2.5 years ago now, we went on the Metal Man. And safe to say, I wasn't in great shape the next day.
No.
But for what we're doing tonight now, we're having 3 or 4 pints, having a chat, recording a podcast. It's actually ideal for that, because it get like you want to be have a bit of lubrication recording these things, and it gets you there.
Yeah. So anyway, listeners, how are ye? How'd you get on this fucking week?
Text in.
Fucking tell us how you're getting on.
For any of the listeners out there that do actually want to text in or ask any questions, you can record a voice message on the Anchor app if you download it, and you can send them directly to the Snugcast. So we're just Snugcast on the Anchor app. So if you do want to ask us anything, have anything contributing to a podcast, send it away in.
I'm sure we'll have a bit of crack with you anyway.
Yeah.
We'll
insult you.
So I've asked the listeners how they are this past week. DJ, how was your week?
Really good. Yeah. Really positive, yeah. Was 4 hurling training sessions, went okay in all of them. We did a bit of work, I suppose, got through it.
Yeah.
Edited a podcast and published it. Mm. Well, edited it and you published it after signing off.
Yeah,
positive week. Actually, look, we make a balls of most things we do. Got the old social media game up and running now. We're growing. Most importantly, saw my grandparents on Monday night.
No way.
Yeah, still flying. Shout out to Anna and Morris there. Fucking absolutely flying it. And be down for a few apples there on Saturday night for a few apple tarts during the week.
Jesus, fucking flying it.
Absolutely.
There last weekend, actually, I was went up to Dublin. I was up to the girlfriend there in Dublin, and I went to the Borgosh Energy Theatre, and I saw Jurassic Park. with the National Concert Orchestra, or National Symphony Orchestra, whatever they're called now. I think they're after combining the two of them. But funny story, right? We were coming out of the spot afterwards. So we'd seen the whole thing, like, you know, and it was fucking absolutely amazing. Like, it was so immersive, like, you know, and the orchestra added loads to the whole thing. So came out of the theater and we were just, like, standing on the balcony, just kind of waiting around afterwards. And I overheard this guy beside me, and he goes, "Oh, the fucking, this Jurassic Park thing was absolutely amazeballs, man. It was absolutely amazeballs. It was as if I was, like, back in fucking the Jurassic era." Right? So, like,
fucking nonce.
So, like, absolute nonce, right? But, like, so, first of all, right, fucking Jurassic Park is set in whatever, like, 92 or whatever it was. Was it? I don't know what.
Jurassic Park, 95, if I was to guess off the top of my head, but it's mid, early to mid-90s, yeah. Anyway.
So, right.
The first one, anyway.
So, right. First of all, right, it's not set in the Jurassic era,
no,
right?
It's set in the 90s.
It was set in the modern era at the time, right? Second of all, right? Like, are you expecting a fucking cello to be back in the fucking...
Do you know, like, fucking T-Rex would walk in there, have an old team tune following around.
We are dinosaurs.
We should not be here. It is 1992. We can't even get the year right.
Scans, like, right?
Absolute,
yeah.
Shiteology, huh?
Yeah.
There's always one.
Oh, yeah, there's always one, yeah. And myself, I'm drinking the Metal Man as well, actually. Fucking absolute peach of a drink, like. Like, as I said there, it's heavy enough, like, but Jesus, it's absolute beauty. And speaking of Metal Man's, your girlfriend,
Metal Man, Metal Women,
she's a metal woman, fucking dropped you down there here tonight, like, in the car.
Shout out to Niamh, went out for dinner, she dropped me down.
And like in fairness, like in this day and age, right, like, no one in Ireland, right, wants to drink drive. No. That is our generation's mentality. I've gone for J1 in the US, and they're mad about it. They absolutely love
drink. Give a fuck.
They love drink driving. Like, honestly, it's as if it's a hobby of theirs. Like,
you nearly get pints if you're below a certain limit.
Yeah, yeah. As in, you get penalty pints for not doing it. Like, yeah.
They have a big ad campaign over there to condemn sober driving.
But, like, in fairness to Ireland, like, it's one thing we've gotten bang on right, like.
Yeah. I think, look, my personal view on it, maybe we've gone one step too far with the recent reductions. Now, look, that's my personal view, but then I suppose you can't argue with statistics in the RSA. Like, they brought up good statistics here to say.
Yeah, I know.
They're probably right in what they're doing, look, you know. That being said, I got a drop down here today so I could have a few points.
I know, but, like, as in, say, your girlfriend dropped you off, like, 2K, whereas, say, you're in fucking, like, Farn 4 or somewhere, like, in the middle of Kerry, like, or wherever, like, you know.
You have to go to the airport for a pint.
Yeah, as in...
Yeah, I know, listen, like...
Do you mean rural Ireland? Like, how many pubs in rural Ireland are shut down now, like, because
of it? But say, for example, if I build in Tullahore, which I intend on doing, I'm in the middle of nowhere.
Mm.
New Ross is the nearest town. There's two pubs either side of the parish. You're not fucking driving it. Well, you know, if you're not driving it, which I won't be, you're not getting a taxi out there. There aren't any.
No.
So you're relying on spins or a high-vis jacket and a fucking 2K walk.
Yeah. No.
There is a solution.
Go on, tell us.
I'm not going to take credit for this idea because, in fairness, Tommy Kyrie, who we gave a shout-out to in the last episode, gave us this idea earlier. He said, you know what you should talk about in this podcast, lads? Driverless vehicles. And I was thinking about applications for driverless vehicles while I was eating my dinner earlier.
Yeah.
Jeez, wouldn't it be great to have a driverless vehicle to sit in a passenger seat after a few pints?
Yeah, it would. Ultimately, it'd be like, right, so if the whole thing went fucking smash bang perfect, it'd be brilliant, right?
Yeah.
But like, it, at the end of the day, it's technology at the same time, like, you know? So like, anything can go fucking arseways with technology, right?
Also, what vehicles are available to us?
How do you mean?
Like, do I sit on the back of a driverless motorbike and hug a, like,
a robot, like,
hug a robot or hug a mannequin, yeah. Mannequin for stability?
Yeah.
Or like, driverless cars, obviously Google are pioneering them at the moment.
Yeah, well, I think the ones in Google at the moment are pretty much just kind of like a mini, nearly like a small, like, driverless mini, like, it's,
yeah,
it's very small car that's it's like a god, like, you know,
yeah,
it's maybe like a golf cart, cart, yeah, like a, yeah, golf cart without the steering wheel or anything, like, you know,
without the human.
So like, I'm dragged back to, do you remember the film I, Robot with Will Smith? 2004, I'd say.
I was around that time. We were of a junior vintage back then, like, right, junior sortish.
So like, there's, again, like, that film, like, deals with the whole issue of the intelligence and AI and stuff, right?
Yeah.
So I think I actually only know this from this film, right? But there's three laws of robotics, and it's actually the very start of this film. And so it's Isaac Asimov is the fucking author who does it, right?
Fair play to you.
And it was a short story of his in the 1940s or something, right? But it details how robotics kicked off, right? So the first law of robotics is you can't harm humans, right?
I'm all for that.
You can't harm humans, or you can't have harm caused to any human, which are two separate points.
Yes.
As in, the robot can't harm humans, or they have to save a human from coming to harm.
Which, that's, for example, two humans kicking the shit of each other.
Mm.
How do they intervene?
Exactly, right? Or do they intervene, or whatever, yep, right? So, right, that's one point there, right? The second law of robotics, or artificial intelligence, I suppose, as it is called now, is that a robot must obey the commands of a human unless it interferes with the first law.
Right, so basically it's like the Ten Commandments.
Yeah.
In terms of thou shalt not kill, like the robot is programmed to do what a human commands it to accept these commandments, which are like thou shalt not kill or kick the shit of another human.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Yeah. I think robotics is a very interesting area in terms of if they could perfect robotics, like they can computerize timings around traffic lights and stuff like that. So I think, right, in theory, you could go with driverless vehicles and driverless. But I don't see how you half have driverless vehicles and then half have human operated vehicles. I don't see how that works. Likewise, then there were sex robots. I'd rather be driven by a robot than a robot. Do you know what I mean? Like, you know where robotics is going, like, they're taking it to mad places. But my take on driverless vehicles, I'd be all for it if it was nothing but driverless vehicles.
See, that's it, as in, so basically, so right, I'll tell you the third law.
Go for it, go for it. Sorry,
The third,
I thought the first law, two parts were the two laws, but it was law 1A and 1B, no. Sorry.
So the third law of robotics is that, now I might be completely wrong on this, but as far as I remember, it's that a robot, hold on now, a robot will come to know, or a robot will like prevent itself from coming to no harm once it doesn't intervene with the first and second law of robotics.
Sure, like, that's a real fucked up negative feedback loop there you have going. Do you know?
Yeah.
Like, there are countless scenarios where all those laws conflict. But that's in the context of a robot mimicking a human.
Yeah.
Whereas a robot driving a human...
So you got to...
I don't know how those laws apply in full to...
Yeah, but...
Do you know what I mean?
But
it's complicated, actually, when you think about it.
I know, but that, like, that's the space that we're in at the moment, whereby... we have robotic, or we have driverless cars on the horizon, right? So, like, they're probably, like, taking the sense of... They're just driving us around. They're, like, you know, preventing crashes, whatever, like, you know? But... So, iRobot, the film... Spoiler alert here, right?
Yeah, if you haven't seen it.
If you haven't seen it in the last 20 years, but go fuck yourself if you haven't, right? The end of that film, the mother robot or whatever of all these robots decides that the human race is coming to such a standstill that saving the human race by killing, or like say, like, you know, cancer and like disease and like all these kind of, like, you know, crime, all these kind of aspects of humanity is eventually going to end the world, that the robots are going to end it prematurely in order to save the human race, as in order for it to come to less harm.
Well, so, like, you know, it's survival of the fittest. It contradicts survival of the fittest. It contradicts all that theory in nature.
And at the start of the film, so non-spoiler alert, because...
You'll see it at the start.
You'll see it at the start. So the start of it, it's Will Smith, and he basically fucking hates the robots.
Yeah.
Out the gap, he just absolutely hates robots.
Just like he hates the zombies in I am Legend.
I am Legend.
I was going to say I am Human.
At the start of... He loves films starting with like... So at the start of iRobot, he hates robots. And you don't find out for, say, like, I don't know, half an hour of the film. But then eventually you find out that he was in a car crash. So similar to, say, like what we're talking about here with, like, driverless cars and stuff, but, like, he was in a car crash, and he is knocked off a bridge, and the car is, like, submerged underwater, right? So it's him and the other car that is in the collision that are submerged underwater, right? So, in the other car, in his car, it's just him. So, like, say, 30-year-old human in a car,
majestic,
right?
Majestic human at that.
Majestic human, right? In the other car is a, husband and wife and a 8-year-old child, let's say, right? So, the father and mother of the child are killed on impact in the collision, right?
Yep.
The car is swept over the bridge into the water. A robot is on the bridge, like one of these fucking, I don't know, walking, talking robots, right? That is able to catch everything, like, just, you know, operate fully. Like,
basically, like a house elf in Harry Potter.
Yeah, exactly, right? So this robot then jumps into the water, right? So the robot jumps in and it sees Will Smith, 30-year-old male, in a car, right? And it sees 8-year-old kid in another car. The robot calculates that Will Smith, if it dives down at the same pace as it's going to dive down to save the kid, has a 50% chance of survival. The kid, on the other hand, the 8-year-old kid, has a 10% chance of survival.
So he picks Will Smith.
So the robot picks Will Smith, who has had a longer life, but goes to pick Will Smith. So basically, Will Smith, because he has survived this ordeal, decides that fuck robots, like, as in, I will pick the child every single day of the week, like, and it's that human interpretation of things.
Yeah, so it's a compassion that the robot lacks, that a human would choose the child to save first and then try and deal with the consequences of the 30-year-old later.
Yeah.
If the robot is cold and calculated.
Yeah.
Right. Driving vehicles, automatic, like robot-operated vehicles in, as I said, I think if you can get them all going and you can computerize it all, fine. Obviously, there's a margin for error there. Whether that margin for error will be as big as the human margin for error is, I'm not too sure. The other side to that, too, is robot-operated anything is only as good as the human that's designed it. And it is only as good as the faults in the design that the human that designed it has put in place.
Mm.
So even though robotics are probably like greater from a probability point of view, a mathematical and a pure hard science point of view, I still think in the example you gave with iRobot and Will Smith, they'll never have the compassion that humans make decisions with. Likewise, they'll never, I suppose, they'll never be flawless, which is what you're trying to achieve with a robot. And the other thing I'd point out there as well is you're looking at robotics in, like, say, healthcare, robotics in, like, you know, the emergency services. Like, I've an uncle who's a fireman who attends emergency scenes, and if you had a robotic fireman, it would be making decisions similar to those that robot made in iRobot, where actually, in fact, you know, the compassion element of emergency services is one that makes emergency services what they are. So, like, you know, it's like, started off talking about driverless vehicles, but you get into this minefield, and I think we're at a point in time now where we have the means to provide robotics in so many areas, but do we have the understanding of the implications and knock-on effects to deal with the consequences of that? I don't think so.
Yeah, and like, as you were saying, right, as in, once there is complete buy-in, it'll be fine. Like, as in, once there is complete buy-in of cars, right, like, there'll be no traffic jams because, like, so I remember 2011, I was on a J1 in the States, right, and we were coming back from Vegas to San Diego. And we were in this traffic jam outside this town, right? But so we heard on the radio that the traffic jam was 2 hours long, mm-hmm. right?
Yeah.
So 2 hours, right, means that the first car in that line, right, takes off, right? The delay between that car and the next car takes however long, like a second, yeah. right? The delay between that car and the next car takes a second, 2 seconds, whatever, right? Right, right. So that basically, that each of those cars take, like every car in that line takes a couple of seconds or more, right, to get the engine started and move, right?
Like, if it's 1 second and it's 2 hours, doing quick maths,
yeah.
that's like 7,200 cars minimum.
Exactly, right? So, but like, do you know, as in, it actually wasn't, say, like, it was maybe, like, say, 2,000, 3,000 cars, whatever cars, like, you know, but it was just that delay between cars,
yeah.
right, of it, right? But if you had, like, robotics in place, right, say, if there was a stop because of an accident, right, the accident was cleared, and there's a pile-up of 3,000 cars, each of those cars are going to start at the same time, and are going to move at the same time. They're all going to move. They're all going to start and move at the same time. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
So it's not. There's not going to be any like human delay between the cars. Like. So they're all going to move at the same time.
But the flaw to that theory then is, say for example, what's the error ratio? Like, what's the probability of error? 1 in 1,000,000, maybe.
Yeah.
But when that 1 in 1,000,000 happens, so if that's happening every day at rush hour, and there's, you know, thousands of cars going by, once a week you're going to have one of these cars malfunction, and then you're going to have a line of 3,000 cars moving and hitting it.
Yeah.
Do you know, I think, like, there's so much to iron out. I don't think it's straightforward.
I suppose that, like, that as well is why they're taking so long to do it. Like, as in, like, what's the Silicon Valley in fucking in San Fran and stuff are like, you know, they have like cars moving there the whole time, like, you know, but
I suppose,
and what they have, I think they have like, yeah. I think Google have like billions of miles and of data, like,
but that's grand, but Google don't have billions of miles of data on world's most deadliest roads that you see on Discovery Channel. Google don't have billions of miles of data in downtown New Delhi.
You
know what I mean?
Yeah,
so like, I think that there's a bit of context we have with that.
Is that, say I have an electric car, right?
Yep.
And you don't, right? And you're bombing it down the road, like, and my car is going fine, like, you know.
Tipping away,
right? And you're bombing it down the road, you're fucking too fast, too furious, like, you know.
Shout out to Vin Diesel.
Yeah. So you're bombing it down the road, right, towards me. And you start skidding towards a young girl, right? Like fucking a 4-year-old or something that's like playing on the side of the road. Lose control of the car and start skidding towards her, right? So does my car then take my life? So I own my electric car.
Yeah.
Right? Does my car take my life as a random person, right? Or does it take it as like, I don't want to die.
But can your car compute that in that split second?
That's what I mean.
Can it compute what's happening behind it and that there's a kid there 4 years of age and do all that? Do you know what I mean? Like,
but let's just say it can, right? Right?
Well, then if you go back to your fundamentals of robotics.
Yeah. So
then the first law and the third law are conflicting. Because in order to save that girl, which would be preventing harm to another human, it has to harm a human.
Yeah. So say that girl, right, who has, say, if the car intervenes, right, has 100% chance of survival, right, and I have, like, say, 50% chance of survival if it intervenes or whatever, right, does the car then take the decision to divert its course off the road to save the girl and risk my 50% chance of survival, like?
The honest answer is, I don't know.
Yeah, and like, do you know, as in, like, I don't want to die, and like, do I want to put myself into a vehicle that is going to chance me
that
to
could
die?
Possibly put your life in danger
for a chance of somebody else that is like.
And for all you know, the child could be an absolute bastard.
DJ,
go on.
What is your favorite airport of all time?
Favorite airport of
just
all time.
Just to fucking rock the boat all together now.
Just to throw a spanner in the old works. Favorite airport of all time. Can I answer with two airports?
Of course, yeah, sure.
Right.
You don't have rules in this podcast, like.
No. The loose rules are no libel, no slander. And if there is, fuck it. I have two favorite airports.
Go on.
My first favorite airport is probably Schiphol in Amsterdam.
Stop, you're robbing the answer. Go on, anyway.
I'm robbing your answer, am I?
Yeah,
sorry. Like, what I love about Schiphol is it's so accessible from downtown Amsterdam, going both ways. And they go both ways in Amsterdam. So when you get there, you're close to town, it's just a tram ride away, you're in there. You can even get a quick Uber, and it's, you know, you're there in no time. And it has everything. So, do you know, if you're travelling at a queer hour of the morning, when you get there, they have all sorts of food outlets, everything you could want, and it's very well signposted and organised. There's good flow. But also, like, I have to say, like, I've travelled out of it once. I think I went to Portugal or somewhere like that out of it. Farnborough Airport in Kerry. Like, you know, when you're travelling, there's the whole angst about going to the airport, travelling, actually the ordeal of getting to the airport in time, getting parking, going there, travelling on the plane. It's just a fucking nuisance for everyone. Farnborough Airport, there's about 40 car park spaces. You pull in, you park your car. I don't think there's even a ticket in service, if I remember. You go in, and literally, when you walk in, the double doors opens. You can see right in front of you the double door, and
it's basically the runway. Like, their security section is about one lad with a hat on and a, you know, now from airport security, I'm sure they do everything above board, but there's so little action there, like, and it's all regional flights to just these little destinations for people in Kerry. Fly over once, fucking in and out. I'd say you could arrive at Farran Fore Airport 8 minutes before a flight would take off and you'd make the flight. Yeah. Fucking love it.
Like, there are two quality answers. So I'm going to add to the ship hall one there. So I had a 12-15 hour layover in ship hall there once. Was it flying out or the flight? No, sorry, it's flying home. We were flying home from Beijing to Kiev, Kiev to Amsterdam, Amsterdam home to Dublin. We came to Schiphol, right? So we had like 15 hours in Schiphol or something like that. And like, fuck me, there's so many good shops and shit there. Like,
it's amazing.
It's class. Like, there's an electronic store where it's like flying a drone for about an hour, like, and there's like what's Albert Heijn, you know, that fucking
the basically their version of like a super, it's a supermarket, isn't it? Like,
it's like Super Value.
It's like Super Value or Greg. It's more like Greg's in the UK or one of them. Like,
I wouldn't put it as low as Greg's. Like.
No, it's like a quality Greg's. Yeah.
Yeah, it's like a quality Greg's. But yeah, they fucking like
Waitrose.
Yeah, they have like fucking bottles of beer and stuff, like bottles of Heineken for like nothing in there. Like, it's absolutely amazing.
You knacker drinking in the middle of an airport.
But like, I think the amazing thing about that Amsterdam airport, right, is that so you have the airport, right?
Yeah.
And it just seamlessly blends into like a train station for into Central Amsterdam, right? But like also to like anywhere else in the Netherlands and maybe like parts of Belgium or whatever. Like.
Oh yeah, it does go to Belgium.
Yeah,
and like from there, there's actually is a Eurotrans train that goes from Amsterdam Airport to Paris as well.
Yeah, so like that's like insane.
Gateway to Europe.
But like literally, like as in, it's not even like change terminal or whatever. It's literally just walk down the road and it's like the same building. And it just opens up a bit, and it's fucking like you just kind of go down an escalator or something, and
you're there. They have that Manchester airport too, and like this is a big gripe I have with Irish airports. They're so disconnected from the locations they're supposed to be. Like Cork and Dublin airport, you're not even fucking close to where you want to be.
Yeah, it's like is it like £6 on the 6 euro to get into Dublin City off the city bus or whatever it is. City.
But you're on a bus, you could be fine for 15 hours.
Yeah.
Do you know, and then you're
going to be going on a bus, like.
No. And it's just limited.
But another thing about Schiphol, right, as well, is that right, this is class, right? So 15 hours there, right? So I went up to there was like this kind of like food hall bit, which was pretty class. Like,
I'm familiar with this work.
Third floor of departures, because you know, like the annoying thing, like in a lot of airports, is that a lot of the food stuff is like after check in, but like you can only check in say 3 hours or whatever before your flight.
Yeah.
So.
The departures lounge is.
So basically, you're fucked in the departures lounge. So, in fairness, in Amsterdam Airport, you can go up to I think it's like third or fourth floor, and like they have like this food court there where you can get food. So we went and got food there, but then like outside of that, right, there's like a rooftop outdoor area that you can go to where they have an entire Boeing, I don't want to say 747 because I actually don't know, but it is a fucking huge plane, like some, I think it is a Boeing of some sort, but like a Boeing like out on top of the roof that they have like steps into, and that you can go up into, and you can like go into the cockpit,
no
and like
way.
Have a mess around in the cockpit, and you can have a mess around in the plane as well, for like, basically, it's pretty much for kids.
Imagine getting free rein at that when you're six, like.
Yeah, well, stop at six, like 27, like, yeah. I was fucking diving into the thing.
Elbowing children to get
yeah,
out of
yeah,
the way.
Get out
that bastard child that your fucking car tried to kill you for.
Yeah.
Fucking
go fuck
there.
Yourself, like, right?
Trying to seat me whole.
So that's awesome, right? Secondly, right, they have, like, I'm pretty sure they have, like, art installations from, like, maybe not, like, Van Gogh, but, like, they have definitely, like, art installations from, like, other top artists inside in the airport as well. Also, they have this clock inside in there that is, so I think it took the artist 12 hours to make this clock.
Yep.
So basically, this artist...
An hour.
So, basically, it is... Say the face of a clock that is blank with no minute hands or no hour hands, right?
Yeah.
So, there is a silhouette behind the clock, okay?
Yeah.
Painting the hour hand and the minute hand, right?
Yeah.
So the artist paints the hour hand and the minute hand, right? And then within the minute rubs out, like, say, just as it's gonna turn fucking, like, as it's gonna go from 1200 to 1201, he rubs out the minute hand and he paints. So he rubs out the minute hand, keeps the 12 hour hand, but he paints the 1 minute line,
yeah.
Right? So that artist did that for 12 hours. Like, actually did it for 12 hours.
Okay, yeah.
And they recorded the whole thing and they put it on a face clock in, like, the departures or the arrivals hall in the place. Like, the whole recording of him, like, painting it.
That's mad.
And, like, so basically it is their hour clock inside. Like, it, honestly, you have to see
yeah,
what the whole thing
but
is.
But imagine if you didn't know that. And you went there, and then like 6 months later, you went back. You'd be like, "That lad's still painting that fucking clock."
Oh no! It like so. It honestly looks like it because
yeah.
I think they have like at the back of the workstation, they kind of have a silhouette of your man to still make it look as if.
Oh yeah, like still painted. Yeah,
it's
yeah.
So good.
That's brilliant. So Schiphol is your answer.
My Schiphol, yeah. Schiphol from yeah is my favorite. Like yeah.
Great.
Worst? What's your worst?
What's your worst, yeah. My worst airport I've ever been in. Newcastle Airport is certainly tainted for me.
Stop, the UK airports are horrendous.
But Newcastle in particular, because I once had a 37-hour delay in Newcastle. Yeah, when I was 16. Come back from a school, like one of these exchange trips with a school for a week, like. Fucking nightmare. And all the what there was one games room and like it was just so when you have a 17 hour layover shit or 37 hour fucking delay.
I actually find about those UK airports is that they're way like they pull your luggage like a lot more than say like Irish or other EU airports or even US or airports, like, you know, which I would think are much stricter. But like they tend to like just pull your luggage, so like you're in a fucking huge queue. Everyone's luggage is getting pulled, so there's a huge backlog already, which is slowing down the whole process.
Yeah.
Then you're waiting at the like the pulled queue, like let's say. And you're waiting for your luggage to come back, like, you know?
Yeah.
And, like, there's nothing ever wrong with it at all. Like,
no.
Like, it's not as if it's, like, we all know the score. Like, 100 mils, you know, 10 100 mil items. They all have to be in a fucking plastic bag.
And you know what? You can actually... I play this game when I'm at an airport where I look at people in the queue and I say, who's the prick that forgot the fucking 100 mil rule?
Yeah.
And I'm actually there, I'm like... You, and I reckon I'm about 50-50. Like, you can actually fairly spot the pricks that are, like, coming out, like, wondering why they're fucking... The women with the big tub of, big can of hairspray wondering why you won't get on, or the fella with the fucking big bottle of fucking Dove shampoo, and you're like,
yeah.
Here, Johnny, like, there's signs, they're battering you with signs on the way in.
But Newcastle is just tainted for me in that regard. Other airports that are shit, I don't know. I think on I genuinely think Dublin and Cork Airport are very poor compared to Europeans. Like Cork Airport is something, but at least when you get into Cork Airport, you're there and you're out. Do you know, you don't have to fucking spend time when you come back in it. Dublin Airport's getting better, I suppose, but like when you get Ryanair flight back in Dublin Airport, you have a fucking 2k trek to get back just to fucking arrive. Do you know, I probably think they're not great, and we Luton Airport shite as well because it's out in the middle of nowhere. Other than that, I found we've travelled an awful lot to loads of various airports. I think they're fairly similar in Spain. They're all grand, like they all have something to offer. You lock up by yourself for an hour if you're waiting for someone or something like that, but fuck me, Irish airports are bleak, except for Farran Four. Shout out to Farran Four. And UK airports, especially them non-big huge ones. I really like Liverpool Airport because it is that small. It's similar to Cork Airport in the sense that you're in and you're out. But like Manchester Airport's good because you're in and you're through and you're on a train to wherever you're going. Or if you're like, you know, they have a good taxi rank system there. It's very clear and obvious. But fuck me, we flew into Leeds Bradford once. That's a bleak bastard of a place.
That's bleak, yeah. And I think they accept as well that
it's a bleak bastard of a place.
It's a bleak bastard of a place. But because they outsource their staff,
yeah,
they have security companies that come in to manage their whole security thing. So I think, like, I actually have to disagree with you for Dublin Airport.
That's perfectly acceptable.
I actually love
security in Dublin Airport are top notch,
right?
They have a great sense of humour. They make everyone feel at ease. I'm not disagreeing with that.
Literally, like, every time I've gone to Dublin Airport, they've gone, like, if there's any bit of, like, a queue going on, I go, and fucking security scanner 6 is open, security scanner 4 is open, whatever, right? And they just fucking, they know how to just split up the queue, like, and you're in it in, you're through the thing in no time and all, like,
I agree with that, yeah. And also, Dublin Airport's a great spot for a pint of Guinness.
Oh, top notch, right?
But I'm talking about the overall airport experience, which includes arriving.
Yeah, well, yeah, arriving and, like, say, your long-term car parking needs and stuff.
And the passport and your check situation of the airport is ridiculous, is a fucking disgrace.
And your walk safe to Ryanair, like, you know, that's a joke. But, like, say, if you're travelling, like, Aer Lingus and stuff, and you're in, the 300s or one of those, once you're not in the
whatever, 211 or whatever, 240, depending where you're going.
You're not too bad, like.
Fucking airports. Airports are, like, we've travelled together an awful lot professionally and on personal trips. We're both laid back characters in the airport. Like, the last time me and Eve went on a holiday, we went to we're going out with Dublin. Actually, we went to Liverpool recently on a weekend trip, and no, it wasn't. We went to Lisbon. Sorry, my apologies. We went to Lisbon in June there, and do you know how laid back we are? Like, we go in, we go for a pint. To arrive at the gate, or a couple of minutes after they say to arrive, that should be fine. I just remember, like, we landing at the gate, and, like, there's only about 5 people left to do the boarding pass check, and she freaking out. And that's the norm for me travelling. That's the norm. Like, don't we take our time going? Like, we're not going to be running there and up the front of the queue without priority booked or something like that. Joe, that's just not our style. Whereas Niamh was saying, like, I've never been this late to arrive for a plane.
Yeah.
Good stuff. What's your worst?
So my worst airport experience was, to tell you the truth, it was actually in the same flight as my best airport experience, right? Right.
Yeah.
So my best airport experience was from Beijing to Dublin, right? So it was Beijing to Kiev, Kiev to Amsterdam, Amsterdam to Dublin, right? My worst airport experience was from Kiev to Amsterdam, right? So I arrive from Beijing in Kiev, and there was I think we had a 50-minute layover, right? It actually seemed quite long enough at the time. So we got off the flight. There was no one there off the flight. You know, sometimes with connecting flights that are tight enough, you have people to connect you off the flight that are like, oh, you need to get on this bus, or we'll drag you here, blah, 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 right? None of that. So we got off the flight, and we're like, fuck, we need to get somewhere now, quick, fucking on the dot.
Pronto, handle.
So we got into the airport terminal. And by Christ, it was like a fucking it was like a refugee camp.
Yeah.
No joke, right? There was
queues. I've heard bleak things about Kiev airport, like.
There was queues like the length of the airport. Like, it was like fucking Beirut, like. It was insane. Right? So we didn't comprehend that this was just a general queue. We thought this was like some sort of like special queue, like, you know. So we're like, no hassle, like, sure, we have like 50 minutes or whatever. Or like, we also kind of like thought that even if this was a queue, that it was, you know, so long and so kind of narrow or whatever, that like, you know, just kind of tip along, and, you know, there was, you know, 20 open desks or whatever, you know, you just get through, like, you know. So we went up to this connection desk thing, and we go, look, we have 40 minutes now at this stage to get onto our flight. Where do we go? She goes, you join that queue. And I go, grand. And how long is that queue? She goes, I don't know, maybe 3 hours. Fuck. Go, sorry, what? It was 3 hours. We don't have 3 hours, like, this is a fucking joke, like. She goes, well, tough tits, like, you're not gonna get anywhere with this. So go fuck yourself. Like, we need to go home, like, we're traveling since
February.
We're traveling for about like 4 months now at this stage, like, just leave us alone. So your one's giving us no fucking cop on at all, like. So anyway, so we go back to the back queue and kind of survey the scene. We only have, say, 35 minutes left now, like, until the flight departs. So I say, Kira,
turn on the waterworks
now. We need to get home. We're fucking homesick now at this age. We need to get home, like.
And the thing about that is, it's not even being sexist saying, Kira, turn on the waterworks. If you start crying, people take no notice. No. Just think you're a pig. Like, they'll just be think you're an absolute fucking sap.
Yeah.
You know.
I know, but in fairness, she's close to the waterworks.
Yeah. Anyway, like. she was there already. Like, you just gave her a pinch in the back of the arm and set off.
So, and fairness, though, like, she fucking went straight to the waterworks. So put on the waterworks, straight up to the top of the queue, like, you know. Me, two, go, ho! So, like, and like, that was me, that wasn't her, like, she was just crying, like, you know, but I was like, you know, and in fairness, like, there was this family, like, at the very top of the queue, like, and they were like, yeah, go on ahead, like, you know. Actually, we went 15 minutes early for the flight again.
He's sitting there with a croissant and a coffee, like, happy out, like, fucking blissful, like, fucking absolute fucking chancers. Oh, shalom.
Oh yeah, no, actually, I look, but like, honestly, the way the staff treated us and like the fucking the shit, like, as in, so
there was that shit house, really.
So like, there was that 3 hour queue, right? But yeah, there was four security places in Kiev, four
in the whole of the airport.
Four security scanners in Kiev, like for that, those counting flights. That's but fucking scam.
What I want to say about that is, right, that's Kiev in December 2017.
December, yeah.
There wasn't a fucking Champions League final in May that year, 6 months later. You know, like, they're expecting hundreds of thousands of people in one day.
Yeah.
Do you know, you think they get their shit together a couple of months in advance. No. Look, we got home in the end and we ended up going to Jordan's for a pint a few nights later.
I love it.
Pints and Jordans indeed, and we ended up going on a Christmas party that night, which, you know, we look forward to trying and get some sort of content for a podcast together on our Christmas party this year. However that'll work, it'll be a bit wild. But Owen, I think we're going to try something new for this episode. We're all about not resting on our laurels and trying new things, and we're going to try a section where you're going to try and tell us how to bet poorly. What are you calling this section, Owen?
I'm going to call it Tab's Top Tips.
I fucking love that.
Look, I'm probably the worst gambler in the world, so
I'm a close second.
Yeah, so I'm going to try and inflict my knowledge onto the listeners or our drinking buddies out there in the wider community.
Just want to start this section off by saying, please be gamble aware, gambleaware.ie or dot wherever you live in. Do not lose your mortgage on gambling.
Yeah, well, like, when the fun stops.
When the fun stops, definitely stop. Like, we're the kind of lads that go in with €5 in coins to Paddy Powers once a week and place five different accumulators that might return €2,000 each and then never come off.
No, we,
like
we,
last week,
we lose a fiver.
Oh yeah, like pretty much like last week, Bolton, Portsmouth, Middlesbrough, Charlton, Chester, and some other couple of teams that I probably never heard of probably let me down.
That's
typical a week for us. Like,
yeah, right.
We would have won €18,000 only for 18 teams let us down.
So I'm giving me my top accumulator there for this week. So it's a 6-club accumulator.
Would you call this your taka?
Yeah, it's tabaka.
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 Tobacco. For €1, €1 stake, you get a 26.55 return. Okay.
For six teams.
So six teams, okay? So Spurs v Liverpool. So
at Wembley.
At Wembley. Not Spurs home ground. I'm going for the pool. Right. 7-5. They're actually not even favourites at, like, so.
Do you think that where Liverpool are now, the bookies are thinking too much about that 4-1 last year where Degsy Lovren just had a shit show?
Yeah, maybe. So, like, I've listened to a few podcasts. I listened to the Hard Yards rugby podcast, right? Mm. And in that, they have said that bookies definitely go for history.
Yeah.
So, like, pretty much fuck form. Like,
I think as well, though, like, when you look at it, this game was scheduled to be Spurs' first game at their new stadium.
Yeah.
And then obviously that toilet bowl of a stadium has been made a fuck of.
Yeah.
So
it's going to be in FIFA though. It's going to be in the new FIFA.
It's going to be in FIFA.
So basically it's going to be in the new FIFA before the boys, the actual fans are actually going to be able to see it.
Yeah.
They'll be able to see it in FIFA before they're going to actually see it live.
They have a sliding pitch, but they don't have a stadium.
Yeah.
No, I'm a Liverpool fan. I hope that comes in.
Okay. Second bet is Chelsea v Cardiff. I'm going for Chelsea.
Chelsea at home, yeah.
They're Chelsea at home.
I don't see any other result.
Yeah, they're 1-7 favourites. Okay.
Right.
Third match, it's Huddersfield versus
Crystal Palace. I've always liked Palace. Like, they're such a, like, an attacking, like...
I've never liked Palace. Basically because of Chris Dambul.
Yeah, but, like, I don't know. I've always, like...
But Palace were a team of mine in LMA Manager 2002 or 2003, basically because Clinton Morrison played with them.
Mm.
So, but I do think Palace away at Huddersfield. Is Zaha back?
I actually have no idea.
That's the key. Apparently they haven't won a game for 4 years where Zaha's been out. That's an exaggeration. I think it's like 2 years, but...
Yeah.
They need Zaha.
Yeah.
Because Benteke couldn't hit a barn door with a banjo.
But, yeah, so that's a... It's probably a dodgy... Like, that's a dodgy game because they've put in Crystal Palace, like, above odds.
Yeah, but what are they?
7-5.
It's only because they're away, though. I think Huddersfield are probably the second worst team in the league behind Cardiff. I love Dave Wagner. I think he's a great coach, but they haven't invested. I think Huddersfield are relegation fodder.
Okay. Next game then is Man City versus Fulham. Man City, obviously.
Yeah, sure. Good luck.
I love Fulham, though. They're a fucking quality side. Like,
I missed them when they weren't in the Premiership.
Yeah. Yeah, I did as well. Like, they're such a lovely side. The next game then is Newcastle versus Arsenal. I have a soft touch for Newcastle, but in this match I'm going for Arsenal.
Yeah, I think here, what odds are Arsenal in that?
5-6.
I think here, Newcastle, they're not great, but Rafa's a great manager. And yeah, he matches up well, and Emery's still starting off at Arsenal. I personally think 1-1 draw is written all over that. Because I think Arsenal are wide open at the back.
Yeah.
So I can see maybe Ayoze, Perez or someone scoring on the break. But Arsenal take a lead through Mkhitaryan.
And the final game then is Everton West Ham. West Ham have had a fucking piss poor start to the season, right?
Brutal.
Everton are only evens, which I think is pretty good odds for for Everton. Like, Richarlison's after hitting 2 for Brazil. And like, I think he's actually having a really good start of the season. Like,
I'm not going to look a gift horse in the mouth here. Like, as a Liverpool fan, I have to take every opportunity to take the piss out of Everton.
I know you are. Yeah, I know.
So I'm going to make the counter argument and play devil's advocate for West Ham.
Yeah.
Right. They're unlucky against Arsenal.
Yeah.
They conceded a fluke goal to lose the game. Right, they got annihilated by Liverpool. They weren't at the game, but they just picked the wrong fucking midfield. Like, who in their right mind puts Mark Noble and Jack Wilshere in the one midfield? It's the most immobile midfield since fucking me and you. Like, and I think Felipe Anderson has looked really good. If Marko Arnautovic is back and fit, I think they'll cause that Everton backline trouble. Everton are home though, and Marco Silva has a really good home record as a manager. So I do think, on the balance of it, Everton made a really good start. But I'm hoping Richarlison's a bit tired from flogging it out with Brazil, and Everton are just typical Everton and make a fuck of it. And I think, you know, Felipe Anderson's looked brilliant. Hopefully they sort out the back. And look, Pellegrino's won the Premier League. He's not a bad manager, so I'm going to play devil's advocate and say I reckon West Ham will win that.
Okay, I hope you don't, because I have a bet on.
I hope you win that €26.
Yeah, so do I. So then my other bet is a £3 bet for a 16.40 return. And okay, this is in the Airtricity Premier Division, right?
The greatest league in the world, self-proclaimed.
Greatest league in the world. So I have Bows versus Cork City. I have Cork City beating Bows.
They're odds on.
Like,
yeah, they're flying.
It's like Cork City and Dundalk are just flying. It's a two horse race, like, you know.
Yeah. I go along with that.
So then I have Waterford versus Bray. Bray had a fucking horrendous start of the season. Waterford had a magnificent start of the season. Waterford now have a horrendous this part of the season has been absolutely horrendous. Brave again after getting better and better, but I've gone for Waterford just to reclaim some bit of.
Is that on Friday night? Yeah,
Friday night. All these games are Friday night.
Training, so I'll miss it. But we went, or like we went to see Waterford. They won 3-0.
I know. Yeah. Early part of the season.
Early part of the season, they were flying. Yeah. They had a lot of loan players, and then they went away, and they kind of have stumbled since then. But
yeah. Third game then I have it's Shamrock Rovers versus Limerick. I have Shamrock Rovers to beat Limerick.
Right. I'll go along with that, Jeff.
Shamrock Rovers are 1-8 favourites. 1-8 on favourites for that game. And then in the final game, I have Sligo Rovers versus St. Pat's. I have St. Pat's 6-4. I actually thought I had backed Sligo.
So,
but St. Pat's are
fucking got it, got it.
If they're 6-4, sure, look. What harm?
They're in with a puncher's chance.
They're in with a puncher's chance. So anyway, that's £3 on for a 16.40 return. So you're talking just over five return.
5-1-ish.
Five-ish. And then I think we'll sure fucking been shiting on long enough here now.
Absolutely.
I'd like to thank Phil Grimes again for hosting this another episode of the Snugcast. They're fucking fantastic men here, in fairness. I've really enjoyed this episode, and any parting words? Or
yeah, I just want to give a quick shout out to Yellow Belly Beer Microbrewery from Wexford. They're opening a bar tomorrow in John's Bridge, literally a stone's throw here from Phil Grimes. You can see it when you walk out the door, called Grady's Yard. They open tomorrow. We're recording this on Wednesday the 12th of September. They're opening tomorrow at 5 p.m. and certainly we look forward to recording a podcast out of it soon enough. Keep posted for that. So it's Yellow Belly Beer Wexford. They have an online shop, and they're opening they have a microbrewery in Wexford, and they're opening a microbrewery in Waterford now tomorrow. So shout out to them. Really looking forward to seeing what they have to offer here in Waterford, and really looking forward to going for a taste there tomorrow. We're back in Phil Grimes tomorrow night to record some more stuff, and I'm looking forward to tasting some of Yellow Belly stuff which they supply to Phil Grimes tomorrow night. So shout out to them. As for anything else, just to finish off the show, I'd just like to say follow us on Facebook at Snugcast, on Twitter at Snugcast, and on Instagram at Snugcast. If you've enjoyed these episodes and the previous episodes, like, follow, subscribe and listen. Thanks a million. I'm DJ Walsh. Owen Tabb's been hosting. This has been another episode of the Snugcast.
Good luck, you bastards.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here, and it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Do you ever feel like your brain is on overdrive and your mind is constantly racing? The plans, worries, and to-do lists are never-ending. Calm can help your mind take a break from the noise by softening anxiety symptoms in the moment and helping you cope with day-to-day stressors. Calm is the number one app for sleep and meditation, giving you the power to calm your mind and change your life. For listeners of the show, Calm is offering an exclusive offer of 40% off a Calm premium subscription at calm.com/stressless. Go to calm.com/stressless for 40% off unlimited access to Calm's entire library. That's calm.com/stressless.